The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I am incredibly honored and excited to have on Todd Baldwin. Todd, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well. It is a bright and early over here in Seattle, so I know a little bit earlier than where you are, but I am super happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. No, pleasure's all mine. We really appreciate it. I know you're incredibly busy. Everyone's, you know, trying to do everything they can and continue the grind on a day in and day out basis. For those that maybe don't know, I am on the East Coast, so Todd was kind enough to join us a little bit earlier in the morning. Todd, for those that maybe haven't heard your story, don't know who you are, hopefully they have, but just in case, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about your journey, where you're from, and what kind of real estate you find yourselves in these days?
Sure, absolutely. So going back to the beginning, and I'll keep it relatively brief, but long story short, I grew up in an incredibly poor family. My father was abusive, wife beater, like no good. My mom got out of that situation, luckily, to, you know, keep us all safe. But we got, you know, we got evicted. She had to go find a place for us to live and waiting in line for food banks and, you know, just all of that stuff. And so I started working when I was 12 years old. I was literally shoveling horse manure for $3 an hour as a kid. And it was at about that time where I just looked myself in the mirror and I was like, I've got to make millions of dollars. So I started a couple of businesses in high school, like landscaping businesses and like candy sales businesses, because my high school, I guess, was anti-sugar or whatever. So there was a huge market for teenagers that wanted their candy and soda. So I started a business that way. I started making money online when I was 19. I started investing at 20. And I did go to college where I met my wife. I ended up dropping out of college at 22. I got myself in a sales position where after commissions, I was making well over $100,000 a year, you know, just 9 months after dropping out of college. And we bought our first house at 23. And we just pretty much kept buying houses. And I think we bought 6 houses in 4 years or so. Now we are up to 6 total properties, although I am selling a couple. It's been phenomenal. Like it's been great. My style is a little bit unorthodox. I am in Seattle, which is an incredibly expensive market. So actually all 6 of my houses are rented out by the bedroom. And it's because young people here don't want to spend $2,200 a month on a studio, which is what they go for. They'd rather pay a guy like me $900 for a bedroom. Across 6 houses, we have like 40 tenants and we're collecting, you know, $45,000 a month in rent. And so it's been killer.
You say unorthodox. What I hear is opportunistic.
That's right.
Seeing a way to take advantage of the market and in a place where rent is incredibly high. It's a great, you know, it's a great town. It's a great city, very well known, not only in the United States, but I'm sure globally, but it is expensive. So I see opportunistic where you're saying that it's unorthodox. I know you've had a lot of incredible success. I'm sure it's not been just purely smooth along the way. And that's really what we're here to talk about, is just educate our audience and some of the experiences you've had going through this process in real estate. Obviously, you're very successful in what you do, but along the way, there's probably been some challenges or things that you've had to learn that ideally, I'm sure our audience would benefit from as well.
Absolutely. So this is sort of just an interesting thing. And I don't think I'm unique to this by any means. But so I mentioned earlier that I grew up extremely poor. Food stamps, welfare, like all those things. I watched my mom struggle and it was really, really rough. And my you know, abusive biological father, before my mom and him got divorced, my mom didn't know this, but instead of paying the rent every month, he was putting it into his drug habit. So that, you know, we got evicted eventually. I wanted to approach real estate at sort of a more like holistic, you know, like I'm not going to raise a rent on anybody. I'm going to take care of people, all these things, which is very noble and good. I think the mistake that I made was ignoring red flags in potential tenants because I had a soft spot, because I grew up in poverty. I know what it's like to, you know, have a family that doesn't have good credit or gets kicked out of their house or whatever. The mistakes that I made were ignoring these red flags, and someone would apply to my, you know, house And the background check would tell me to decline because of their bad credit score or because of, you know, their rental history or missed payments. And sometimes I would make a decision to go with my gut and my heart and say, we could have been that family that gets rejected because of circumstances that weren't even necessarily in our control. And it's bitten me. And it's, I hate to say that because it's like, it's, this isn't what I wanted to do. I've had people that, you know, get into the place with no intention of paying rent. You know, they pay the deposit to get in, they sign the lease. And with this eviction moratorium that, you know, was going on, I had a young woman who, again, I had a soft spot because she reminded me of my mother. I got her in the house and basically she was just like, so I don't have to pay for the next 6 months and there's nothing you can do about it. Now, I was incredibly lucky that I called around to rental programs and I actually got every dime that I was owed and I was able to convince her that this wasn't a good fit. So I did get her out of the house and I got the rent that I was owed. But I could have not been that lucky and I could have been stuck with this non-paying tenant for 6 months. I'm in a very, very liberal part of the country where they don't really like landlords. Man, it's just like, it sucks. Like it really sucks because like my whole thing was like, I wanted to be the guy to create affordable housing for people that don't always have access to it. And sometimes there are people on that end that just want to take advantage. And I do think that's the minority of people. I don't think most people are out to screw you. But the fact that there are people who are out there who will do that, you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to protect you and yourself. You know, you got to protect your own, basically. If the background check says decline, man, you got to decline. Even though it might pull on your heartstrings a little bit, you got to take care of you.
Well, and to your point, unfortunately, there are some people, and very much in the minority, as you said, that do want to just take advantage of situations. And it's incredibly unfortunate because somebody like yourself who does want to help, and I think a lot of folks out there do, they do have that special spot in their heart because they know that, you know, people just have unfortunate events or unfortunate times in their life where it's a little bit more challenging. And I think we all are wanting or have the ability to want to try and help in those, but we also want to protect ourselves to make sure we're not getting taken advantage of. So if you're giving advice to somebody, obviously you're doing background checks. What are the types of things that pop up as red flags to you that say, you know what, I either need to investigate this a little bit further or just maybe just pass on this person because it's not a good fit?
Yeah, I definitely think if they have incredibly low credit, like just their credit's in the toilet, that's something you want to be aware of because all that means is they're not paying their bills. Like that, I mean, that's what it means is they have debts or bills that they're not paying and it affects their credit score. And I was a little bit naive and I thought, well, maybe this individual is she was like 22. I was like, she may not have any credit because she's not, you know, she just haven't had the experience. So that, you know, that's one thing. Obviously, like there's, you know, criminal stuff. And depending on what state you live in, you may or may not be able to decline someone who's like a felony. I know it's actually not across the board. And in my state, they tried to do something that was awful. I don't think it passed, but they basically wanted to eliminate criminal background checks because they thought it was unfair. So you could have you could buy a duplex and live in one half with your family and young children, and you couldn't verify if the person going to rent the other half of your duplex was an insane criminal. I don't think that passed, luckily, thank goodness. Yeah, you know, the background check, the employment stuff. And I never raise the rent on a tenant. Like whether you stay with me for 6 months or 6 years, I don't raise the rent on you. And so I'm still able to feel good about that. And I am providing affordable housing. You've got to protect yourself, especially in areas where the landlord tenant laws are not favorable to the landlord. You have to, because nobody else will get your back. Yeah. I mean, these red flags, low credit score, shoddy payment history, you know, if they've ever been evicted, find out what for. And you can't save everybody, and not everybody wants to be saved. There are, unfortunately, some people who just want to take advantage of the system.
We've heard it before, and I think I'm hearing a little bit here, trust but verify.
Yes.
Right? You know, you have these people coming in, you want to help, trust what they're saying, but also verify it and look into it and make sure that it fits both parties, you as a landlord and them as a tenant, making sure it's going to be a good partnership on both sides of the fence. It was interesting you said also that you were able to find some programs that would actually able to recoup the money that you were owed. Again, I hear your hard work, not luck, but your hard work going into and figuring out how do I make sure that I'm still compensated for what I'm able to do for this person. And ultimately, I think it sounds like you were able to get them out and find, show that it just wasn't a good fit. But where did you go to find those resources? And I know it's maybe a little bit different now with like COVID. And as we come out, it's going to be a little bit different afterwards. But for those that are looking to do something similar or just rental in general, where can they find those types of resources if they find themselves in a situation or just to prepare for a situation that they may run into with something like this?
Yeah, great question. Phenomenal question. So I live in Seattle and the county that Seattle is in is called King County. So I just looked up King County Housing Authority and I found rental assistance vouchers. And I basically cold called every single housing program that offers housing assistance in my state. So depending on what state you're in, it could vary. There are some like federal ones, but the quicker ones, the better ones, in my opinion, are the ones that are in your area because the money is specifically designated to go to renters in your area. The other benefit is the payments go directly to the landlord. So it's not like the check's going to go to the tenant who can then blow it. The check goes directly to you. And I called around, I actually got about 10 grand from different programs in my state to go to pay rent for various tenants who are experiencing financial hardship. So absolutely do that. And here's what's going to blow your mind. One of the companies that I called sent me $1,700 for a tenant who was behind on rent. It got them whole that, you know, they ended up paying later. And actually, that's a good point. None of my tenants are behind. I didn't actually lose out on any money because of these programs. But I called a program. I got a check for $1,700. The man who I spoke with works at this, you know, tenant housing, like program, whatever, this voucher program. He said that in his 25-year career, I was the very first and only landlord to call on behalf of a tenant to get money. So what that means is there are many landlords that are forgoing rent. They're either forgiving it or they're just not collecting it. And they don't even know these programs exist. And or they're hoping that their tenant will make a phone call and your tenants won't. They won't do it. You have to be proactive. As the landlord, it's your responsibility to be proactive and find these programs. And it's, yeah, I got $10,000 in basically free money that I wouldn't have otherwise collected without taking my tenants to court or something. So it would definitely behoove you to find the programs in your area and to just be friends with them and to, you know, to get on a first name basis with the decision makers over there.
Yeah, it may be something that you don't actually have to use, potentially not. Better to be safe than sorry, and just understand how the process works. Who do you need to reach out to? What does the process even look like if you have to go down that road? You're right. That is incredibly shocking that you're the only landlord that's reached out, because to your point, why would a tenant need to do that? If the landlord's going to be forgiving or be able to waive the payment, why as a tenant would I want to do that? Maybe I have a really good heart and I want to do that, and I have all the best intention in the world, but you know, inevitably things come up, you know, it falls by the wayside. But I mean, this is your livelihood. So why not go try and find that assistance?
Well, here's what's crazy. A news story just came out that, again, in the county that I live in, they expect that there's going to be 50,000 evictions in my county at the end of June when the eviction moratorium ends in my state. That is because there are about 50,000 households that are behind on rent. And again, for this specific program that sent me $1,700 pretty readily, like I called them on a Tuesday. I had the check in my hands on Friday, that next Friday. I was the only person who called, and there are 50,000 tenants behind on rent that are facing eviction. Not only is it good for you as a landlord to recoup your money, it can also keep people housed. There is a cost to free money that people don't necessarily even think about. And that is the idea that I want more free money. And I'll give you a quick example where I have a tenant, their rent is $1,500 a month. I have rent due on the first, but it's not late until the fifth. Anyway, I found a program that could cover the first $1,200 of their rent. So that means that this person, this couple actually, only had to pay $300 for an entire month, which was great. But it took them, they still paid that $300 11 days late. So it took them 11 days to come up with $300 between two people, by the way. And it's because once that free check came, they were like, oh, well, I wonder if we can get another free check. I think it's a phenomenal short-term solution to make you whole and to keep your tenant housed. But you got to set the expectation, hey, it's a blessing that you have this free check coming your way. It may never happen again. So right. This is to get you back on your feet. It's not to subsidize you for, you know, it's not to take care of you for the rest of your life.
This is a short-term fix to a bad situation for both of us. Let's do this and then let's get you back on the right track down the road.
Totally.
Love it. Todd, I think that's the goodest place ever. Hopefully somebody in Seattle is listening to this. Some of those 50,000 folks that are potentially getting ready to get evicted, hopefully the landlords are hearing this and they're going out and they're helping find the money to pay back some of that, but also help prevent some of those evictions where they can be prevented. So Todd, thank you so much. For those that maybe want to reach out, learn more about your process, your operations, how you found success, anything like that, where's the best place folks can find you and reach out?
Sure. Awesome. Yeah. If you have any questions for me, my Instagram is usually the best way to get in touch with me. It's just at Todd J. Baldwin. So very easy, just at, and then my name. I do also have a YouTube channel where I teach everything I know about real estate investing. And that again, is just my name, Todd Baldwin.
Perfect. Todd, again, thank you so much for the time and all the lessons bestowed upon us today and for myself and the audience as well. Thank you so much, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we'll catch everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.